Now, before we have our reading today, we're just going to have a little intro first. So you might have seen in our notices, we're starting a new series on the book of Jonah. Now, the thing with Jonah is, it is quite important, but it's rarely someone's favourite book. But if I were to ask you to tell the story of Jonah to your neighbour, what would you say happens in it? Now, you don't need to tell your neighbour to do it today. Now, if you are going, I've never even heard the story of Jonah, you have the advantage today, so don't worry. Because the thing with Jonah is most of us learn it from a book like this. Okay? Most of our knowledge of the story of Jonah comes from a children's book. Because the big bit of the story that we all remember is the whale and the big fish. And if you were telling someone about it, I'm pretty sure that that would appear pretty early on in your telling of Jonah. There are lots of versions, children's versions of the story of Jonah. Some are good, some are less than good. Some of them are truly awful. I've read a lot of them in this last few weeks. But there's a few that you might want to just read. Now, if you're going, I'd like to rediscover this story of Jonah. At the back next to the table where we have our collection plate, you'll find a cartoon that covers the entire story of Jonah. We had one similar for Isaiah, so if you found that helpful, there are copies of that at the back. But whenever we look at a book in the Old Testament, sometimes it can feel a bit impenetrable to lots of us. Or sometimes we just read it as if it's the book we're buying for a four-year-old. And the Old Testament is written assuming that you are very clever, which is obviously true. And it's written in a way that is rich, that you would need a lie down after if it was your dinner. It is full of layers upon layers of meaning. And in this series, we're not going to be able to cover everything. As much as I might like to, I'll have to restrain myself, or people will start throwing things at me. But Jonah is a book that helps us to understand the whole of the Old Testament and the New Testament. It's a microcosm of what's going on. Now, I like a bit of Doctor Who, okay? And if any of you have been Doctor Who fans in the new eras, you will be familiar with Bad Wolf. You're looking blank, so I'm assuming you don't watch Doctor Who. In Doctor Who, there was a whole thread that went along about Bad Wolf. And you kept seeing Bad Wolf appear in various episodes. And no one really knew what it was about. Until about three series in, when Bad Wolf suddenly made sense. And then everyone went back and rewatched it and saw all the clues about Bad Wolf. I'd encourage you, read scripture first, then watch Doctor Who. But it's now, if you're watching an episode currently and you spot Bad Wolf somewhere, you know the writers are doing something. They're either pointing backwards to a story that's happened or forwards that this story is going to continue to grow. And when people were writing the Old Testament, remember, people didn't have their own copies like we did. People would remember it in their hearts and minds. And so phrases and words that were repeated were really, really important. Now, Bad Wolf is not about to appear in the book of Jonah. But if you do, I'm fascinated by that conversation where you find it. But there are lots of phrases and themes and words which take us back and push us forward in the big story of Scripture. So I want to encourage you over the next month to read the whole of the book of Jonah in one go. It's a page and a half if you're panicking. Okay? So at some point in the next month, can you find a page and a half I really, you know, I might do know where these are, and that is my only knowledge of the Old Testament. Don't worry. The joy of studying scriptures, the more we do, the more that pops out, and everybody is still learning where those links are. So take time to read that whole book. We've got all kinds of resources that will help you in the next month. Keep an eye out in your notice sheet. But as Mary comes to read our passage for today, I want you to listen out. What things get repeated? What sounds familiar, even if you're not sure where it's come from? What just rings a bell? So let's listen to Jonah.
As Jen's already said, our reading is from Jonah, chapter 1. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come before me. But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. And after paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. Then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. But Jonah had gone below deck, where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. The captain went to him and said, "How can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us so that we will not perish." Then the sailors said to each other, "Come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity." They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. So they asked him, "Tell us, who is responsible for making all this trouble for us? What kind of work do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you?" He answered, "I'm a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." This terrified them, and they asked, "What have you done?" They knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them so. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, "What shall we do to make the sea calm down for us?" "Pick me up and throw me into the sea," he replied, "and it will become calm. I know that it's my fault that the great storm has come upon you." Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Then they cried out to the Lord, "Please, Lord, do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, Lord, have done as you pleased." Then they took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. Now the Lord provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Now, before you get excited, we're going to ignore completely the fish until next week, because we get a little bit obsessed with the fish. But I want us to start right at the beginning of that passage. So when we get an introduction to a character, sometimes in the Old Testament people will tell us who they're related to, and sometimes that's because people might have gone, "Oh, they're from that family, oh yeah, yeah, we know him." But also sometimes it's giving us a clue, that hyperlink, to somewhere else.
So when Jonah is introduced, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. That's because this is not the first appearance of Jonah in Scripture. Jonah, son of Amittai, is a prophet that people would have already known about. He appears in 2 Kings in chapters 25 and 26, and he is a well-regarded prophet. He has gone and told the people that Israel's land will be extended back to what it was in the time of Solomon. Good news. He's well-liked. People are sat there going, yeah, you know what? This is good. I like him. He brings us good news. And for those of you who've been around a while, not all prophets bring good news. And so he was someone who was proud of his country. When we're introduced to Jonah, he is meant to be the hero of the story. We are meant to be in a pantomime. He is the one we cheer for. And so we get introduced first and foremost to this character that we met a little while ago. So if you don't know loads about what Jonah did outside of this book, maybe you want to go look 2 Kings 25, 26 and hear of his story then. Because that's how people who would have heard this the first few hundred centuries would have known. So Jonah is here and God speaks to him as he has to prophets of old for hundreds and thousands of years. God speaks to Jonah and tells him to go to Nineveh. And Nineveh is a place that is a no-go zone. This is not a place that you want to go to. It's still a city today, although it's changed its name. It's now known as Mosul in Iraq. Again, probably not top of our holiday list right now. But for Jonah, this was a place that you really, really didn't want to go. It was known as the City of Torture. It was part of the Assyrian Empire. We know they're quite often the baddies in lots of the stories you get in the Old Testament. So Nineveh is the place you do not want to go. It had its own special forms of torture. Okay, I've chosen carefully which versions I'm going to tell you because some of them are a bit distressing for a Sunday morning. This one is a bit distressing, but if there was ever a better torture, this is it. So one of the things they used to do in Nineveh to those who crossed the border was to chop off both their legs and one arm, but not kill you, and let you and shake your hand as you bled out to die. That was just one, and trust me, they get far worse, forms of torture. So suddenly, when Jonah is not wanting to go to Nineveh, you know what? I can understand this. You know, whatever that place is to us, think that we do not want to be sent to, what is your kind of place that you don't want to go to? My training comment when I was a curate, he'd done a gap year, he was a fairly new Christian when he started it, and he prayed and prayed that he would go anywhere in the country, but he didn't want to go to Northern Ireland. Anyway, but that was his thing. And he was from Reading, and he got his letter through, and it told me he was going to County Durham. But because it had County in front of it, he assumed it was Northern Ireland. And spent 2 weeks in tears that God was sending him to Northern Ireland. He did not want to go. Durham is lovely. But we all have those places that we don't want to go to. And Nineveh, for good reason, is part of the Assyrian Empire, right on the furthest reaches of what Israel's territory might have been. Now, just shoot back. What did Jonah say in that bit in Kings? That Israel's land would expand and include this kind of area, but he's not prepared to go there. But Nineveh, not a place you want to go. Mosul in today's terms. So it's a place we hear about. So that you can go and look at all the times Nineveh appears in Scripture and follow those hyperlinks. Take you back to that place. So he goes and he goes down to Joppa, goes down to the port, pays his fare, and gets on a ship that comes from a place called Tarshish. Tarshish is far, far away. Okay? We don't know exactly where Tarshish is now. People agree it's kind of Spain, south of France, border territory on there. But to the people here where he sails from Joppa, this is about as far as the boats go. This is far, far away. So we get an idea that Jonah is wanting to go right as far away as he can in the opposite direction to where he's being called. But there's more to it than this ship from Tarshish. Because Tarshish appears in other places in Scripture too. Tarshish is a place that appears in the story of Solomon. And we've already connected back to Solomon because that's what Jonah had prophesied, that the land would expand to how great it had been in the time of Solomon. And the ships appear in this story from Tarshish. Tarshish was known as a big, wealthy port where gold and precious gems were traded. This was a super, super wealthy place. But in Solomon's story, we tend to remember Solomon in pretty positive terms. But the kingdom starts to crumble because Solomon starts to rely on things outside of the land that God has given him. He starts shipping in gold and precious gems. Where from? Tarshish. The place where he's not meant to be. The place that is far, far away, that already was a key part in the destruction of God's land. And where has Jonah chosen to go? On a ship to Tarshish. The man who prophesied that the land would grow all the way to what it was in Solomon's time is now heading away from it to the place of Solomon's destruction. Can you see the links that are starting to happen between different bits in Scripture? The storytellers would have known that people would have made those connections. And we don't, let's be honest, we don't know our Old Testament as well as we should. I'm not claiming to do it. I've done lots of study on this book in the last few weeks. But we all rely on our book in our hand. Imagine you've learnt this off by heart. Oh, wait a minute, I don't know that place, Tarshish. Well, there's a ship that goes down the road that goes to there. Those connections are important. Today we're starting to gather up some threads from the book of Jonah that we'll play with all the way through. We've got who Jonah is. We've got the place he doesn't want to go and the place that he is headed. Now, as you listened to Mary read Jonah chapter 1, think about those words that were repeated. In the first half of the chapter, you'll hear the word Dan repeated again and again. He went down to Joppa. God called a great wind down. He went down to the bottom of the ship. He was cast down out to the sea. In our world, we like to think we're really sophisticated and we understand so much of what's happening in the world. Again and again and again. But for all religions of that time, their understanding of the world was it had three parts. There was the heaven, there was the earth, and the seas and the depths. There were these three concepts. And God lived in the heavens, we lived on the earth, God's occasionally popped down, back up, and then there was the depths, and God didn't live there. That was the place, the unknown, the depths. There is no underwater submarines to go and explore. And we probably have a much more sophisticated understanding now of the world, but for the world this was originally written into, these are the three things that they had. And when they emphasised the word down, they're emphasising that sense that he is going down, away from where God is. He is going down and down and down, away from where God is. Now we know our God isn't like that. Our God doesn't sit on a throne waving at a distance from us. Our God is present in the whole world. Jonah knows this. Jonah knows this. Jonah tells the sailors later on that they know this too. They've heard of his God, and he proclaims, I am a Hebrew, I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea dry land, the heavens, the sea, the depths, and the dry land. He knows that our God cannot go anywhere. There is nowhere that he can escape. Think of the words in Psalm 139, that idea that God knows us before we are even, but where can I flee from your presence? Jonah would know those words. Jonah knows this. He tells it to the sailors. And yet, he still thinks he can outrun God. Because Jonah is like many of the prophets that we know in the Old Testament. They are often reluctant. They don't want to do what God asks. Think in your heads about all the stories of God calling prophets. From Moses, who has a great argument with God about why he can't do it, why he can't speak, and then eventually he negotiates to have his brother come and help. You've got Elijah, who genuinely has a death wish. He would rather die than do what God is asking him to do. Jeremiah, who says, I am too young. And there's a wonderful bit in Jeremiah where God says, I'm stuffing the words in your mouth. It's a wonderful image. I'm literally stuffing them in. They're all reluctant. There is not, I can't think of a prophet who goes, brilliant, out there. These are stories that the people are familiar with. We're familiar with a prophet being reluctant. But Jonah's story is different to all those other ones. Because all of them are having a conversation with God about it. Jonah hasn't spoken to God at all through his chapter. There's no conversation. There's no honesty saying, I am scared, I'm afraid, I can't do it because X, Y, Z. He just goes down. Down to Joppa. Down to the bottom of the ship. Down to sleep. And eventually down into the ocean. Because Jonah is starting to turn lots and lots of things on its head. The world in Jonah is slightly different. Because the characters that we're all familiar with, when we hear a story, we're so used to spotting the goody, the baddie, the side quests. I put this up there, I'm sure you can name at least 10 on there, you know, if you're really bored trying to find all of them. But we get used to being able to identify early on in a story who the goodies and the baddies are. And we feel slightly uneasy when we watch something or read something and the characters change within it. God's prophet should be the goodie in this story. The people, the sailors on the ship from Tarshish, they should be the baddies. And yet, Jonah is the one who hasn't even bothered to reply to God. The sailors are the ones who are saying again and again, we know something of your God. They are trying desperately to save Jonah's life, even though they cast lots, interesting side quest. When do we have casting lots appear in the Bible? Come back to that another week. But here are the sailors who are trying. They say we're going to row back to shore to try and save you, even when Jonah offers up his life for them. They're going to try and save him. They are the people who are doing again and again. We're going to try. We know that your God is everywhere. They almost laugh in Jonah's face. Why are you running from your God, who we know you say is everywhere? They're the ones who know more of who Jonah's God is than Jonah. The only person who seems consistent in this story with our big story is our God who has spoken. And he was not left anymore. Because in this story, the world is a little bit upside down. Goodies are baddies, baddies are goodies. We don't know quite where things are going. Our God is a God who is everywhere. As we start to pick up these threads throughout this book of Jonah, let's keep our eyes open to the big story of our God. of someone who was chosen. He offered his life for sinners. Can you start to see some links between this story and a bigger story? This is a story where someone tried but couldn't do it. This is a story that reminds us that sometimes it's the unlikely people who speak the most of God's love, not the people who should know better. Our God is present in all things and in all places. We cannot outrun him. Let's be people who don't just ignore what God is saying, who run and don't even bother having a conversation. Let's be people who follow this story, who know God's presence is with us, and are prepared for what might happen next. I'm going to invite the band to come back to lead us. Like I said, there's that cartoon that goes through the whole of the book of Jonah. And then there's another sheet with some questions to help you start to pull out some of those threads in this story. As we follow this story, let's now go to big story, not just for Jonah, but for all of us. That there is nowhere we can outrun our God. As we say, feel free to stand or sit as you feel most comfortable.